The recording has started.
Thank you, Benedetta. So I'll do the roll call. Greg, we have on the call Faisal Shah, Greg Aaron, who is the leader of the call, George Kirikos, Roland Perry, but I think he has disconnected because his line was giving some problems. Jeremy Hitchcock, James Bladell, Philip Corwin, Martin Sutton, Gretchen Olive, Richard Tindall, and for staff we have Marika Koenig and Margie Milam, myself, Glenda Saint-Jury, and I see that Mike Rodenbach has just joined as well.
Hello, everyone.
Great.
Hey, all right. Thank you for coming.
Sorry, and Andrew Steingolber?
Yeah.
Has just joined as well.
Okay. Finder, if you can log into Adobe Connect, we use that to manage our speaking queues. So I'm going to send in around that link again, and please log on if possible from your location. Okay.
All have received the link by now.
Okay. A couple of brief housekeeping items. A reminder to send your statements of interest into Marika and Glenn. We're going to be posting those in a link off of the wiki. So if you haven't sent that in already, please do. And if you need any guidance, there was a note, I believe, I forget, was it from Marika or Glenn, about how to write those?
From Marika.
Yeah, I think Marika sent it.
Yeah, and if
we can send out a reminder on how it looks so people don't have to dig through their emails.
I'm busy collecting a little note, those who have sent them, those who haven't sent them, so I will send you that again.
Thanks, Glenn.
And then as a note, as you saw on the list, Christina Rosette has had to drop out of the group due to another ICANN commitment. And I think that's it. The main purpose of today's meeting is to discuss the document that Martin sent out over the weekend. It's called RAPWG Definitions 2009-329. If you could take a moment and open up that document. This contains a proposed definition of abuse and then a reworking and addition of various categories and what they might contain. It was made on the list that these are proposed and proposed only. I think that's worth mentioning at this point just to make things explicit. And it, just remember, everything we do is public and could be quoted by anybody looking at our mailing archives. So I think it's probably good that we say explicitly that these are proposed discussions.
Greg, I'm going to try in Adobe Connect to pull up the document. So,
okay.
Or if you know very well how to do it, I'm happy for you to do it as well. But just so folks know that the screens might be changing a bit.
I don't trust the loaner machine I'm on right now.
Okay, I'm going to give it a go. So don't worry if the screens change. We'll try to get it in order shortly.
Okay. In the meantime, has everyone been able to find that document in your mail?
I have not found it yet. My mail's still downloading from the weekend.
Okay.
If people go to the web archive at the GNSO.ICANN.org, they can grab it off the web.
Yeah. And Martin sent it on Sunday, 3:43 Eastern USA time.
George,
do you know that?
You have to go to gnso.icann.org.
Yep.
And then go to the right-hand side. There's a link for mailing lists.
Okay.
And then there's a link to under Task Force Mailing List Archives, Registration of Geuse's Policy Drafting Team. And then it's the March 29th email. It's a zip file, though, which is kind of nasty.
Let's see. I should be got it.
Okay. Well, while everybody is accessing that document, Martin, would you like to talk about how the three of you document together?
Yeah, sure. First of all, from the last meeting, it was agreed that we'd try and list down the variety of abuses that we're aware of, just so that we can start to put them into various categories: pre-registration abuse, at actual registration, and then post-registration abuse. There's also an additional one there that you'll see on the on this list: domain name use abuse. Between us, we have listed down and tried to define from various sources a definition for the type of abuse that we've seen. So if we look at the first category, pre-registration abuse, this is where we've looked at the recent examples of malware being distributed, which also gives us clues as to which domains that they could potentially use going forward to control those pieces of malware. I think without going through them one by one at this stage, we've just tried to apply them into each of those categories where we see that they potentially fit, but also look at who do they affect directly, who's the major target. Reason being here is so that we can at least then start to focus in on some areas of where we could potentially do something about it. Now, whether that's within this forum or not, it can then be decided, because I think quite a few of these we could probably consider outside the scope of REPWG. And I think as some of the emails going around today quite rightly advise that, you know, we need to keep this information and at least show that we've decided what is in and what is out, and what we don't consider to be abuse, so that if any subsequent questions arise as how we approach this, that we've actually considered a whole variety of aspects of abuse and have reasoned out why some are excluded and why some have gone through to the next stage where we believe there is some policy amendments that we could look at. Now, the other thing I would draw your attention to is right at the first element is the abuse definition. Is we've thrown this in to try and at least give some focus as to what we were talking about at the last call, is what do we actually consider to be abuse in this respect of the domain names, registration abuse policies. And I think that is one thing that we need to look at and agree upon between ourselves as a group, and also then look at the particular types of abuse as we've listed, agree that or debate those as to which we think are defined well, should be in there. And I would just recommend that that's the next steps that we take. Is that suitable?
I see James's hand up.
Yes, thank you, Greg and Martin. This is an excellent list. I had one question or possible suggestion for another column, which would be for each of these different types of abuse, if we could determine which ones are solely dependent upon the domain name system and which ones are equally effective or in the wild using just IP addresses only. And that might be one litmus test to help us determine which category these go into, and that was just all I wanted to add.
Okay, so another column discussing whether there are dependencies and or could you say again your note about IPs?
Well, certainly some of these, and I don't know which ones, but some of these will require the use of the DNS system as far as a lookup mechanism, but others are as equally effective just using IP addresses only and can bypass any named IP resolution. And so I'm wondering if by knowing the difference between all of these different examples, if that will help us categorize them.
Okay. James, it's Mike Rodenbaum. I'm just trying to understand that a little bit better. What, can you just tell me why you think that breakdown would be helpful?
Well, it would help us to determine which of these can, which of these require the bad actor to actually engage in the practice of registering domain names, and which of them, if they felt that that was, for example, a vulnerability that would expose their crime, that they could just bypass that entirely and go strictly upon IP, direct IP resolution, as opposed to registering the domain name.
George here, something like spam, for example, might be an example you could have it pointing to, you know, 192.0.168. Well, that wouldn't be a powerful example, but you don't need a domain name to carry out spam.
Right, and I think the same could be said, for example, for botnet control, but, you know, that's probably evolved quite a bit since I last took a look at that, but there could be direct IP resolution into a IRC control mechanism, for example. But anyway, I didn't want to throw this off track. I was really appreciative of this document, and I just wanted to get a better understanding of which ones require domains to be registered in order to function.
Okay. Well, and as we explore each one of these in this meeting and future meetings, we'll end a little bit how they're executed. And we can certainly explore those issues a bit. Okay, I see George's hand up.
Yeah, I was just going to ask whether the two questions, the purview of this task force, could it also include IP addresses from the point of view of ICANN oversees both domain names and IP addresses? And I've forgotten what my other point was, but I'll try to remember it.
It's an interesting question, George. It's something that's not discussed nearly as much as domain names. And I certainly don't know the answer.
I remember now what my other question was. Maybe if we are going to add columns, is whether we should have a column for whether a beneficial use exists for the certain type, like if name spinning, for example, might have a beneficial use for people being able to find good available domain names, something like that, for every category.
Okay. All right. Richard?
Yeah, I think my comments may be a little similar to George's. So I'm thinking we might want a column that indicates whether the activity is sort of always abusive in our minds or potentially abusive if used in a particular kind of way. So, for example, as we look at the first two items there, I can't think of any scenarios where malware botnet control could be a legitimate use. So to me, I think that's always abusive activity. But as I look at the second item, name spinning, I can think of legitimate uses for that sort of activity. So I would put that in the column, the category of potentially abusive if used in a certain way, but I certainly wouldn't call name spinning inherently abusive.
Okay. Andy?
I guess I'd like to second that, and that looking down, especially into the post-registration abuse category here, there's quite a number of these that they're really in and of themselves aren't directly abusing things. For example, putting a lot of meta tags on your site that represent brands abuses search engines and can have the potential to go and abuse other folks. But in the absence of search engines, it's not clear that directly is itself an abusing activity. The same with, a commentary site or something like that. So I've been trying to frame this in, I like the fact that we've got this broken out by consumers, brand owners, etc., but it's better to talk about, at least if we're going to prioritize it as well, in terms of a type of harm caused and what action someone has to take in order to get harmed by this.
So we have the suggestion to add columns and explanation or examination of whether these are always abusive or may have legitimate uses, kind of understand the nature of these things, and maybe get a little more specific about when they're abusive or when they're not. Okay. And James has asked, can these be perpetrated using domain names or also through another means such as IPs? Okay. Anybody else have any comments before we start looking through the doc?
I think Nancy has her hand up.
Andy?
Oh, sorry, Andy.
No, I was done. Thanks.
All right. Pat?
Yeah, the only other thing that I can think of is that, some of these items are probably going to end up being out of scope for what we're talking about. And when you get towards the bottom and you talk about transfer notices and renewal notices, I think that's probably something that we could list, but I think that may be beyond what we're trying to achieve here.
Mm-hmm.
So it'd be good to keep track of those things that we think are abusive, but that we believe they're either out of the scope of what we're doing or within scope of what we're doing.
Yes, and back to Martin's question, if we keep a list, at least this will communicate back to people in our report that we did look at these things and then made a determination about in or out, or maybe it's best for another group to look
okay.
Better.
I'm in late, so if that was said earlier, I apologize.
No problem. Phil?
Yeah, two comments, which I think, further refine what we've already said here this morning. Some of these, one, may or may not be abusive. You have to, it requires further analysis. I mean, cyber squatting, obviously, there's a UDRP process, and whether or not a particular name being used in a particular way is or is not violative is something that is open to dispute and may or may not be, depending on what the panel decides. But even then, some of these, let's say a particular domain is found to violate the UDRP, there may not have been any abuse in the registration process itself for that name. So there's, I guess I'm saying for each of these, there may be some categories where further inquiry and analysis is required to determine whether the particular abuse actually exists at that domain. And then even if it does, if there was no abuse in the registration of that name, it would seem it's outside the scope of this group, where it was quite clear from the charter that actual abuse in the registration rather than abuse solely arising from the domain itself is what we're supposed to be looking at.
Okay.
That's not true.
Oh, that is true. Somebody broke here. Let's say I own a domain like seeds.com, have a generic use for seeds, but there are trademarks for that in obscure categories. So is that cyber squatting? Maybe if you're the obscure trademark holder, it is, but it, 99.9% of people, it's a generic term.
Okay. Well, sounds like we're getting into the specific line items. already. Maybe what I would suggest do is start at the top of Martin's document. At the top is a proposed definition of abuse, and we are asked in our charter to wrestle with this issue. So, Martin, would you like to read out that definition and tell us about how it was drafted?
Not particularly, no, but I'll try. I think it was really to put something down there to debate and hopefully thrash out something more clearer. So at this stage, with the charter as it was and the discussions that have already taken place, one at ICANN and the subsequent call that we've had, this is a position that we put on there just so that we can try and tease something out. So at this stage we've got it down as malicious or wrongful use causing harm or potential harm to registrants and internet users. Having said that, I think I've got some items on here where I pushed it out as registrars as well, so even that may need to be added in. So I'm interested in others' thoughts around the group, just to see if there is a better way of articulating this, be more precise or broader.
Okay. If you'd like to have the microphone, please raise your hand. If you don't, please lower your hand in Adobe. So far, I see hands raised from Andy, Phil, and Richard. Andy, you're at the top of the list.
I didn't realize I had to unraise my hand. It's all good now.
Oh, okay. All right. Phil, your hand's up.
I just lowered it. I forgot to lower it. Sorry.
And Richard?
I am going to ask a question. So, Martin, in that definition, could you take a stab at defining the word wrongful?
No, see, I get worried about this stage because I always feel I'm in a room of lawyers and legal experts, of which I'm not. So I think this is one of the issues, is how to phrase that in a way that is broad enough to capture what we probably want to capture, but not restrictive as well, because each location may have its own way of... well, its own laws that it can apply. So it was, instead of, you know, illegitimate use, use wrongful. Now, Faisal, Gretchen, is there anything else that is worth adding at this stage from when we were wrestling with what it could be?
Yeah, you know, the what I would say in connection with Richard's statement is that we were looking at that, and we didn't want to make it so narrow as to be just anything that's illegal. We thought it should be broader than anything that was illegal, so we felt that maybe wrongful would broaden the scope somewhat, and we can bring in more abusive activity that way.
So it means causing harm purely? Is that the intent of wrongful?
Yeah, so that we cause harm, and then that's why one of the columns we ultimately put up there, the additional column, was, you know, who was it causing harm to? Who was the target? And I mean that's primarily why we added that additional column.
Okay. Jeremy, your hand's raised.
Yeah, my comments on wrongful, just because I really don't know what that means, and. In the interest of trying to communicate a definition for abuse, I don't know if we should try to take one nebulous word, abuse, and try to put another one in to define it. I think something like malicious really captures the, you know, not appropriate, but another word that might need to go in there is illegal. So something like malicious or illegal that's causing harm. Potential harm also, I don't know if that's necessarily a good word to put in there, because it's difficult to say who's the one to judge potential and
what does that actually mean? It doesn't mean that something's being abused, if there's potential harm, you know, just because technology can always be used for harm in any way. So it's, I don't know if that word necessarily fits in very well.
Yeah.
Okay.
That would be very helpful.
George?
Just on that point, the potential harm is, if you look at some of the types of fraud, types of abuse that are listed there, perhaps, say, phishing, you know, the act of throwing up a website that is purporting to be HSBC and luring customers to that, at that stage, there is no harm done until somebody actually clicks through and gives away their information. So in that case, we know something's wrong there, so it hasn't actually caused harm, but it has the potential to cause harm. So how would we frame something like that?
George?
I was thinking more in that if we're going to have a definition, that it might be wise to put it in economic terms. And that's why in the little chat box I said perhaps an activity that imposes negative effects upon another party, because eventually you're going to have to do a cost versus benefit analysis for a lot of these types of abuse. And it's the economic cost versus the benefits of that activity which will determine, you know, how to prioritize them.
Okay. Mike?
Yep. A couple comments. I agree with people who are a little hesitant to use the words like malicious or wrongful or even illegal in this definition. It's a little bit circular and leads to a further definition that would have to be made. It's the same problem we ran into in the Fast Flux working group at the outset also, which is that you can never really tell whether use is malicious or not, because that's judging the person's intent in using the name. But I like George's idea of framing it more objectively, something that is or could cause harm, basically. And I would also add at the end, rather than just harm to registrants and internet users, it's also harm to registries and registrars and other businesses, really, ISPs, etc. It's not just harm to registrants and users.
Okay. Andy?
Yeah, though at the same time, if we're not gonna have a giant problem with that and try to blacklist all sorts of behavior or create policies to block certain legitimate behavior, intent matters. I set up a phishing domain to spoof my own users to do a test of how effective things are. I'm entirely entitled to do that, at least in most jurisdictions that I know of, and others are not. And so, or if I just want to mock up a page and do a research study or something like that, I can probably do that too with a closed audience. And so intent actually matters on this. So I don't know how we steer clear of that, especially if we're looking to not just define it, but actually specify policy mechanisms or actions that people need to take to deal with it. Then there's no way avoiding that, having that granularity.
Mm-hmm. Okay. James?
I just wanted to voice some support and tie in some of the things that Mike was saying, as well as George. With this definition, I think that we're trying to establish there is an intent that various businesses are affected. If it's targeted at consumers, it's usually theft of dollars or theft of credentials to get money. With businesses, it can be theft of resources. If it's a brand, it can be diminishment of a brand or reputation. So I think the word we're kind of dancing around in some respects is fraudulent. And I put that in the chat room dialogue box there because we're talking about the intent to deceive for personal benefit at the expense of the target. So please, one of the lawyers in the room can chime in on whether or not that word is appropriate and separate somewhat the word fraudulent from illegal, and whether or not that's wrongful, stronger than wrongful. So that was just my question.
Okay. I raised my hand. This is Greg. as Mike mentioned, we got into some of these same discussions in the Fast Flux working group. What we found is that, strictly speaking, Fast Flux involves some technical practices, which are in and of themselves not illegal or malicious or fraudulent. And, you know, it involves some things like proxying, and use of low TTLs, et cetera, et cetera. And so, some people who do those things are doing them for very legitimate purposes. In fact, some large hosting and resiliency providers do those things. The real issue was the intent. Are you doing it to fool somebody? Are you doing it to host malicious or illegal content and those kinds of things? The other part of the conversation was what is illegal, and we went around about that for a while. Of course, illegality depends upon your jurisdiction. Some things are legal in some places, but not others, or are defined differently depending upon the local laws. In some respects, trying to find a common definition is impossible because of that. But on the other hand, you can say, everybody can agree that, okay, phishing is, it's theft, it's fraud. I think everybody could agree that that was illegal. Now, other areas are a little trickier. I mean, in general, everybody in the world agrees child pornography is a horrible thing, and it's illegal virtually everywhere. The niceties of how it's defined vary by jurisdiction. And so that you get into these issues of can one party agree to take it down? They might have disputes about whether it's illegal in the particular jurisdiction in this particular case. So those are some of the issues that we wrestled with, and I see some of them coming up again. More comments on the definition? Should we edit the definition? We've had a few suggestions. Should we continue to use this definition and alter it? Is it a useful thing to do? George?
Well, the definition says to registrants and internet users. Can we agree that it's to third parties, at least? Like, the economic argument that I said, a way of quantifying it doesn't need to actually be in the definition, but could be used later on. But I think it's more than just registrants and internet users. Somebody already pointed out registries, and there could be other people that we haven't thought about.
Can we capture that by internet community? And then do a definition for internet community, which covers all of those.
I like that idea.
Covers everyone already.
There might even be people that aren't on the internet yet. I don't know whether that should be counted. You know, some people in Africa, for example, that might not have ISP connectivity. And stuff.
Yeah, I mean, that's the one we want to
Internet community. Well, is the idea to define the potential victims, that who we're really worried about?
Sorry, this is Martin. I think we should. Otherwise, we won't know what we're trying to resolve at the end of the day. There's got to be target parties that identified, and that's how we would actually work out, presumably, some of the economical type issues surrounding them.
George, just that if, you know, we have registrars and registries that are a part of the process now, then they might think that they're being targeted because they're not part of the group that could experience abuse, that they're always going to be on the wrong side of the abuse. So that might be an issue.
I, this is Richard. I'm not sure we need to be specific on who's being harmed, do we? I mean, it just harms anyone, isn't it?
To potentially also one registrar's activities could be negatively impacting another registrar. That could be considered abuse if, under the definition. So it could be that we truncate the definition to just malicious or wrongful use causing harm or potential harm, period, without specifying the targets. That's one approach.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. George?
Yeah. Oh, that was me speaking.
Oh, okay. Sorry. Okay.
So this is Richard again. I'm still not sure what wrongful means. I think we need to be more specific.
Okay.
I know what malicious means, right? I think I do. It means that there's no other purpose for that activity other than to cause harm. But I'm not sure what wrongful means.
I think we should just take wrongful and malicious out for now, because again, I think it's circular. Is there any conduct which causes harm or potential harm to any third party?
But now I think we've got a problem that all sorts of legitimate activities could cause harm. I mean, I could raise my prices, and that can harm someone.
Okay. Fair enough, I suppose.
Well, this is Greg. I can see unintended consequences of actions being an issue. Like certain activities will increase DNS traffic, for example, and somebody absorbs that and deals with it. Is that harm? Some might. The people who have to deal with it might say yes.
Mm-hmm.
George, here, one possibility is to use the word extraordinary or something that's unexpected, using that, putting that in the definition, but some representation that an activity is out of the ordinary, although that obviously causes judgments to be raised about what is right and what is wrong. Yeah, big philosophical debates.
Richard's, this is Greg, Richard's question brings up another question for me, which is, something can cause harm, but I think then the next question is, so what? Is it something that is fair or unfair? Is it something that should be dealt with or not dealt with? And so where do you go? Or what? I guess it may cause harm, but what does it mean, and what's its significance?
So then maybe we have to define the types of harm that we're talking about. Financial theft or some sort of personal injury. Is that what you're trying to get at, Greg?
George, maybe the word undue harm is a way to attack that issue or define that issue.
Okay. Anybody else?
Yeah.
Then we can say
So,
is somebody talking?
I hear something in the background.
Sorry, that's probably me. I've got noise in the background here. Hang on a second.
Thank you, Martin. So we have a variety of ideas on the table. How do we shape the next definition for discussion? Or how do we edit this? One way to do it is try to do it on the call. Another idea is to try to do it on the mailing list, where we can write down definitions and see it in writing in front of each other. Does anyone have a preference? You want to keep working on it here, or should we break it off and try to do it on the list where we can exchange versions? Anybody?
I think Marika or somebody could probably take the comments from that we've spoken and the ones that are in our chat room here and come up with a couple different alternatives as a further jumping off point.
Anybody have any objection to doing that and working on it between now and our next meeting on the list?
But I'm going to put
okay.
No.
All right.
This is Marika. I think there were some different options raised. So would you just like me to list the different ones so people can, you know, say which ones they like best or start adapting the different ones as they see fit?
I think it makes sense to come up with a few different alternatives from what we said, and hopefully we can try to synthesize them into one.
Okay, and by the way, I see Jeff Bickers. Are you with this? I see Jeff has logged into Adobe. Are you with this?
I don't think he's on the call yet, but he's actually a staff person.
Okay. Well, Marika, maybe what we should do then is There were several different suggestions thrown out in the course of today's discussion. Why don't we try to put however many versions you think is appropriate out there, and then we can. I mean, we're in an early phase. I'm wondering if nobody has an objection to kind of just working through them on the list, and that we're still in a kind of a brainstorming mode here. Can you put out different versions with the different suggestions?
Yep, no problem.
Okay. Thank you. So, that's our larger definitional issue. And then the sub-team very helpfully listed all the ideas that have come up so far, plus some new ones. Why don't we, George, I see your hand.
Oh, just to talk on that last point, if we add more columns to the paper that Martin prepared, we could actually see what might be abusive under some definitions but not under other definitions. So we could add a column, for example, you know, requires intent, doesn't require intent, and things like that, and it might be able to be captured, and maybe we could come up with a better definition once we actually see how many things fall under different definitions. Like after the fact.
Okay. Actually, Marika, at this point, would you like to become the owner of this document?
Yes, happy to take that on, no problem.
I only ask because you're so good at it.
Well, thank you.
We have one suggestion to add another column, and I don't know what to call it, at least one more column. Maybe we call it notes or something, but a place where we can record whether things are potentially malicious and or not malicious, et cetera. But we should start capturing these kinds of things. So, all right, let's just for fun, the first one. And by the way, are we scheduled for an hour, or can people go for an hour and a half?
I'm doing an hour and a half.
You're scheduled for an hour, but if you'd like to go for an hour and a half, it can be done. The call can stretch that far.
Okay. Is there anyone who has to drop off after an hour?
We can use the voting mechanism if we want to do a quick poll or something.
Okay. Tell you what. If you have to drop off after an hour, can you raise your hand? Or or hit the check mark. Either way. Okay, so I see Jeremy has to drop off. Andy has raised his hand. Gretchen. Okay, so we have at least three people who have to drop off after the hour. I'd hate to lose you. And we did say we would meet for an hour, so I want to honor your commitment. So, tell you what, why don't we close it in another 12 minutes. But in the meantime, let's go ahead and get started on the list. The first item is category pre-registration abuse. And the first example is malware and botnet control, pre-designation of domain names to control malware. And the example is Conficker. For those of you not familiar with it, Conficker is a piece of malware that contains an algorithm that calculates domain names that could be that the malware's creators could use for command and control. These names are not registered, but during the course of time, the creator could go out and register one or more of these. So these are names that are potentially dangerous, but maybe don't even exist and are not registered yet. So, interesting question. I'll throw it out for discussion. Is this an abuse?
It's a potential one.
I can tell you what has happened in real life. Conficker is a pretty nasty piece of work, and various registries around the world, GTLDs and CCTLDs, are blocking these names from being registered in most cases. But most of these domains, as it happened, are composed of random letters. So in most cases, they're names that people wouldn't normally want to register anyway, and they don't exist in the registries. In some cases, the names, though, are as short as 4 characters, which means some of the names in the algorithm already have been registered by various parties. Some of them have been in existence for many, many years, as you might imagine. One of the questions that comes up is, what do you do about those? Some of them are obviously with legitimate users, so you don't have to worry that the bad guys will register them or try to use them. Some of the domains, you don't know whether they're owned by a bad guy or not. You simply don't know, because you can look in the whois and you don't know whether that's truthful whois information or not, for example.
But Greg, can I stop you for a second? Because I don't understand this at all. But I thought that the software tried to register those names. So if it's already registered, it simply will move on to the next on the list, right?
No, the malware does not register the domain names.
Okay, so what exactly is happening with the list of names?
Okay, the malware each day attempts to connect to a pre-designated list of domain names. And if it goes to that domain name and finds valid instructions, then the botnet might do something, or the nodes might get new instructions. Now, what happens is the bad guys know which domains those are going to be. Then they'll go out and register one or more of them for their use. So, again, these are names that are potentially bad because the botnet can get instructions and then go do something bad to somebody. But they may or may not, those domains may or may not exist. Have to be registered and used to be efficacious.
And, but they could put anything on their list. They could put Yahoo and eBay and everybody on their list.
That wouldn't be useful because the domain to be used has to be controlled by the bad guys.
No, I understand, but it's still it creates the problem we have, though.
Well,
some of these names could be legitimately used by others.
Yes, and in fact, that is the case. Again, some of these, there's an algorithm that generates domain names. Most of them are gibberish, but some of them are short names, and they're already registered and in use by people. In fact, some of them have been registered for many years by legitimate registrants. So you got this issue of some of the names are an easier call than others, to put it another way.
Probably it's done intentionally to make it harder for the researchers also. You throw, you know, 1,000 good domains and one gibberish name. Researchers have a lot more work to do.
Yeah. Andy?
So the perhaps one of the missing elements on the chart is what we actually expect to have as actions. I mean, so a whole bunch of these things are abuse, but defining them as such without sort of what we want to do about it doesn't get us very far, right? So, sure, a whole bunch of these pre-registrations, we know there's going to be harm if those things get registered and the bot tries to connect to it. And the next step is we want to define something that should happen, right? And so so if they put good ones on their list, that in and of itself isn't abuse, no big deal. But for the ones that are out there that we know that the botnet may try and contact, right, what we're looking for is some sort of action to occur, some governance action or something like that to be able to take place. And so the definition's fine insofar as we can define what actions we want to take for that kind of abuse. And perhaps that happens across the board here, where some of these may be, you know, notify and others may be cause for immediate harm if they're not dealt with in the case of, for example, some of these botnet control channel hosts. So a differentiator here is what you want the action to be. And so this is potentially malicious or it is malicious that it's going to go do those. We want some preventative action to take place.
Well, I see where you're going. It does bring up the question of what the scope of the working group is to do. And we are not at this point making policy recommendations. In other words, saying, in this case, this thing should be done. That might be a job for a follow-on group. We do have the ability to say we think this is a problem and should be looked at as a policy development process or not, or dealt with in some other fashion. So I just wanted to lay that out there. Efficacy and what our recommendation should be is important. There are some things that we may or may not be able to do, though, within the scope of our group. That's all. George?
And what's also tricky is that some of these are interconnected, so that as the previous speaker was saying, that, for example, the malware, those domains, for example, you might not want to block them, or you might want to block them, but subject them to higher standards, like making sure that their whois is accurate. Because if you know, for example, that the whois is accurate, you'll say, go ahead, let the bad guys register them, because that's a way to solve the crime. You could, you know, have a map to their headquarters. And so that shows that they're interconnected, because if you didn't have false whois, if everybody had verified whois, you wouldn't care about malware botnet control, because it's basically a map to their location.
I hear. Oh, thank you for muting. Martin?
Sorry about that. I'm just thinking about that first definition there for the malware botnet control. Is we're talking about more of intelligence gathering from what security vendors, what law enforcement are finding out, and then acting on that in a proactive manner. So I think we've seen instances lately where that's actually started to come through on the Conficker case. So I'm just wondering whether there is a better way of capturing that within that type, rather than strictly down to malware botnet control. This is where information has been identified which could curtail abuse through potential policies that are adopted by registries and registrars in this particular case.
So would you I found the core of this particular item to be the pre-designation of domain names. Would you keep that, or would you replace it with something to do with intelligence gathering?
I'd be inclined to replace it, mainly because pre-designation intelligence will mean you found something that means that something that is likely to be registered will have a fraudulent use.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Comments, anyone? Actually, I'm wondering if we should save that for next time.
Okay.
Because we have come up at the end of the hour. Marika has reminded me of an important thing. We're on a biweekly schedule. 2 weeks from today is Easter Monday. That's a public holiday in some countries, especially in Europe. And I'm wondering if some of you may be off that day, and whether we should reschedule that meeting. One option is to have our meeting as scheduled 2 weeks from today. Another option would be to have a makeup meeting next Monday. Are there any preferences?
Well, first of all, is anybody 2 weeks from now, is that a holiday for people that are on the call?
Yeah, for me it is.
Yes.
Well, should we raise our hands?
Yes, if it's a holiday yes. For you, can you raise your hands? Thank you. As far as you, Martin.
Is that too... Sorry, what date are we talking about here then? Sorry, 13th.
April 6th.
Oh, sorry.
April 6th is next Monday, and then the 13th is Easter Monday.
It is, yeah. I'll be away then as well. But that's a holiday, bank holiday over here.
Okay. Is anyone else off on Easter Monday? Marika's off.
But we can cover it internally. So, you know, if people want to have the call, Margie can cover it for me. That's no problem.
Okay. Is anybody else off on Easter Monday? Okay. So far, I only see two, which makes me inclined to keep it at the normal meeting time, which would be on the 13th. Martin, is that a terrible inconvenience for you, if we go ahead?
No, I probably won't be able to call in there because I think I will be traveling on the Monday. So apologies for that. But obviously if there's any stuff going to and fro between the next couple of weeks, then I can chip in.
Okay. And of course we'll record the meeting and we can bring you up to date offline.
Okay.
So I'd like to wind the meeting down then. Our next meeting will be on April 13th, and I'd like to thank everybody for that document. It was very useful to have in front of us. Thank you for creating it and posting that up for our use. In between now and our next meeting, Marika is going to circulate some revised definitions of abuse, and I'd encourage everybody to have a lively discussion about that on the list, where we can trade comments and revisions. We'll also start revising the document that we put around today. We'll add columns for additional notes and such, and we will continue to discuss that as well. Any other comments before we conclude? Okay. If not, why don't we wind down and see you on the list.
Good.
Okay.
Cheers, Greg.
Thanks, everyone.
Bye.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.